the In the Pattern podcast. Make left traffic, clear for the option.
Minneapolis departure, Archer 641, Charlie 2000, climbing 3000.
Line up and wait, 7 range, 4 Mike Alpha.
Mark Tower 172, Romeo Hotel, hold short on 133, ready to take off.
I'm John.
I'm Chris.
I'm Brad.
And I'm Mark.
And we are the In the Pattern Podcast.
All right. Hello, hello, hello. And welcome to episode 23 of the In the Pattern Podcast. And with me tonight is the usual gang minus one. Unfortunately, we're missing Mark tonight, but we do have Brad. How's it going out there, Brad?
It's going really well, thanks.
Good. Anything new going on?
Oh, lots. Getting lots of time, flying time in, putting my new instrument ticket to good use, flying kind of all over the place.
Excellent. Look forward to hearing about that. And out on the East Coast, we got John Conway. What's happening, John?
How's it going?
Look forward to seeing you in a couple weeks.
I know.
And Brad.
Indeed.
Yes. Yeah.
Coming.
Yeah, I wish we could get Mark out there. One day, we'll finally get it, everybody out there. But this year, it looks like the three of us. That's better than last year. Brad, you left right before I got there, right?
Right. We were never all of us in the same spot at the same time.
Well, we got that fixed this year. So anyways, episode 23, maybe we'll even get out another one before the next, or before we get out there to Oshkosh. But we had some stuff left over to talk about from last episode that we can get into, and some new flying going on. I know I've got a chance to get out there a few different times and had a lot of fun. It's miserably hot though, so we got to get out there and get flying like by sun up and get back by like 10, 11 o'clock at the latest. Otherwise, it's just miserable.
I'll tell you what, it's been that way out here this past few weeks.
Is that right?
We've been hitting 100 like consistently.
Yeah, it's been pretty rough here as well.
Yikes.
Only we've got dew points in the 70s.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, at least that's the only good thing is I don't have to put up with much humidity. If anything, it's in the teens. On Sunday, actually, I was coming back from California. We had a quick little vacation out there, but it was actually raining in Phoenix. But by the time we got home, it had stopped, but it had been raining for like 5 or 6 hours, people were saying to us. We couldn't believe the temperature on our car. You know, the little gauge, it says how hot or cold it is outside. And it was like in the 70s, you know, and at that point it should have been saying about 110. But yeah, it was like 75, 80 degrees by the time we made it back home. And that was nice, but short-lived because the next morning it was hot. But then we got the added humidity from it. So kind of miserable. Yeah, the humidity actually is one more thing you guys got to look at for density altitude. We just got to kind of pay attention to the heat more than anything. But
yeah, I tell you what, that's been my biggest concern with scheduled flight I had for July 4th. But I'll get to the reasons why that didn't happen later. But that was my biggest concern was density altitude because I was going to take my brother up. And I was just like, I don't know if I can do that. At least not out of a 3,000-foot runway with these planes.
Did you break out the manual?
I was about to. I found out I wasn't going up soon enough that I didn't. But just from talking with some people in the club, talking with my friend who was by himself in the airplane the last time it hit 100, and said that he had a hard time getting off by midfield, which is basically the club's kind of unwritten rule of you're off by midfield or you're aborting the takeoff. So.
And you say it's a 3,000-foot runway?
It's 3,000-something. I could tell you that in a second here.
I think...
it's not the 6,800 I'm used to, let me tell you.
Yeah. Yeah, 3,000 would look short compared to that.
Oh, it looks like a driveway. Yep, 3,000 by 75.
Wow.
So I think freeway, where I first started flying out of, is even smaller than that. I think that's 2,000, yep, 24/20 by 40.
Yeah, that's short. I think Deer Valley is around 8,000. The main runway, there's two runways. There's like an 8,000 foot main runway, and then the shorter runway might be 6 or something. I might be off on that. Let's see.
You might be doing some Google searching, aren't you?
Survey says 8,196 feet for runway 7 and 25, 7 right, 25 left. 8,196, but the other one is 4,499, so still 4,500 feet. And it's weird. I've been doing, like, I'll go out and do touch and goes, right? And I'm doing it off of 7 left, the 8,200 foot runway. And then for whatever reason, they'll be like, okay, we want you to switch over to 7 right or 7 left instead of 7 right. And now I got to switch over to that other runway that's 4,500 feet. So, you know, I've lost 2,500 feet or so. And it just looks tiny in comparison to the other one. So you got to, you know, definitely make some adjustments. Plus the 7 right's got a displaced threshold and 7 left does not. So there's a few more things to factor in, but it's always kind of fun. I guess it kind of helps to hone your skills when, you know, you don't got all day to land. You got to, especially if you're doing touch and go. So you got to get it down, make some adjustments and throttle back up and go again. So it's all good.
I have 3,200 feet on the big runways, and 2,500 feet on the small ones, and I do touch and goes on the little ones.
Are those paved too, Brad?
We have one of the crosswind runways is paved, and the other one's turf. I don't use the turf there because it crosses the other two runways. And that bounce that you get, or those two bounces that you get as you cross the other two runways, is not very pleasant.
Yeah, I would imagine. So are you saying that a paved runway runs between a turf runway?
The shorter runways, we've got one that's 2,500 and one that's, the turf is 2,100, and they run across the two primary runways, which are 3,260.
Yeah, I wish we had some turf runways out here. We do not. We have dirt runways at best.
There's a few out here, but I haven't gotten a chance to go to any of them yet. But maybe one day.
I know when it comes to renting too, that's another issue. Is that out here they don't want you taking the plane and landing it on a dirt runway either that you rent.
I'll have to look at the club rules. I don't remember off the top of my head if I'm allowed to or not, but I'd have to check.
Our insurance just changed. I have to look it up. Our old insurance said that we had to land on a runway, but they didn't care what the surface was. The other, I don't know what the new one is. I think it's quite a bit more liberal. So I'll actually, now you've given me something to do some homework about.
But you must land on a runway. Of course.
Well, you know, out here in the wintertime, the lakes all freeze, and they're very flat. And so a lot of them, they'll go out and plow a runway onto it, and it's not an official runway for the purposes of insurance. So you can't normally land on it with our club insurance and be covered. I mean, you can land on it. It's just at your own risk. Mm-hmm. But they're wonderful surfaces to land on. It's actually not much different than landing on a regular runway, because most of the runways get covered with ice anyhow.
Just if you bend something, it's out of your own pocket because they're not going to cover it.
That's correct.
Yeah, that'd be cool. Seen some events like that. It looks like a lot of fun.
Cool.
Haven't tried it yet.
Yeah, we'd like to do that. But, I guess why don't we go around and see what everybody's been up to.
Yeah.
So, Chris, what kind of craziness have you been getting yourself into?
And we've been doing just a little bit of this and a little bit of that. Work's been really busy, but I have been getting out there a little bit. Especially last month, I got a little more flying in than I normally do. what was I going to say? Oh, I got checked out in another 172. I got a friend of mine told me about another 172 P model that is for rent over at Glendale, which is where I went to get checked out in the other 172s before. And so I contacted the guy and went down there and I got checked out in his plane. And, you know, with him, it was the normal checkout deal. We're going to go fly. We did some slow flight. We did, steep turns. We did power on, power off stalls, engine out procedures, and a touch and go on a full stop landing. You know, it was about, I don't know, 1.2 probably. I think is what it was. Let me look. You know, ooh, no, my bad. 0.8. No, that's right. 1.2 on the Hobbs meter. A sweet little plane though. It's hangared, so that's nice. CFI, the guy who owns it he's like 23 or 24 years old. About 3,000 hours or so now, something like that. His dad's a Southwest captain and a flight instructor, so obviously he taught his son at a very young age, and his son went through the ranks really quickly. And they own property up in Alaska, and so he gets to go up there and bush fly and stuff, so he's used to doing that. Sadly, though, he might take his 172 up there I forget what he said. He said that they started a, I don't remember if he said a part 135 or what, but he was getting ready to start some sort of, you know, like sightseeing operation and hauling cargo or whatever up there. So they were going to take the Cessna up there, but it hasn't happened yet. As far as I know, it's still down here. And that was the beginning of June. So maybe it's not going to happen after all, but he was still going to buy another 172 and leave it down here. But man, I was hoping he'd just buy another one and take it up there and keep this one down here, because it's so clean. It's about a 1968-ish model, I'm guessing, if I remember right. And
it's a P?
It's a P. Does that sound
right? The P's right? Are like early 80s.
80s? No, it's not that new. Maybe it's not a P then.
At least all the P's I've flown have been around 81, 82.
And I know it's carbureted, not fuel injected, for one.
Well, they didn't start that until the 90s, I think.
And it only had fuel drains, not 13 like the other ones.
Well, the 13 is for the fuel injected ones, so that's the SP only.
Okay.
As far as I understand, maybe the R, if there was an R model, there may have been.
Oh. You know what? I'll be able to tell you for sure here in a little bit as we're talking. I can look it up. But
yeah.
But anyways, it's just
P came out in 81. You probably were in an N.
Maybe.
There was no O.
What happened to O? What happened to the O?
It's a mystery.
There's no Q either, as far as I understand.
Maybe they didn't want it to look like a 1720.
But anyways, I mean, it's got like beautiful brand new leather interior in it. It's just been kept up. You know, just gorgeous. AngelAviation.com, I think it is. Let me see. Yeah, Angel Aviation. And his plane is, he says it's a 172P. Let me see. It's November 9 or 7, 8, 11. It's an 84. Okay, it is. Very well. Yep, that's it. Just keeps it in phenomenal shape. Of course, like I said, it's hangared, so that definitely helps. He also has a Piper Seneca 2 that he does multi-engine training with. But the 172P, $95 an hour wet, which is just fantastic, especially with the way fuel prices are and were. They were a little higher. They came down a little bit here. So fantastic, and no, you know, he no real big restrictions. You know, if I need it overnight, he's not going to say, okay, I have a 3-hour minimum again. You know, that was cool. So anyways, looking forward to taking that out and saving some money on the plane rental. It was a real nice plane to fly, and I appreciate the way he keeps it, you know. So that was a lot of fun to do. And that was June 1st, but I've yet to take it back out. And I did, you know, 2 or 3 other flights since then, but one of them was with somebody else. Other than that, what else? I did another flight where I took a friend of mine, Mason. And, oh, this is kind of a funny story, actually. So my buddy Mason works with me on my team. He's one of my network administrators, and he's got family that lives up in Payson. So I'm like, hey, you want to go fly to Payson, get some breakfast? He's like, sure. So I throw out on, this was on Friday. So on Friday, I throw out on Facebook, you know, hey, I've got a seat open. If you know, someone wants to do a breakfast flight with me up to Payson. So a few minutes later, I get a text message from a friend of mine named Brandon. And Brandon's like, hey, you still got that seat open? I'm like, yeah, you want to come? He goes, yeah. So I'm like, all right, great. So, you know, we'll meet at the airport. We're just texting back and forth. I'm like, all right, well, meet me out at Deer Valley at Cutter Aviation at 6 a.m. All right, great. So Saturday comes. I wake up. I'm getting ready to leave. I get a text message. Hey, I'm on the road. I should be there right about 6 a.m. I'm like, okay, perfect. So I leave the house. I pull out onto Bell Road, the main road leaving my house. And a friend of mine goes by, beep, beep, in a car. And I recognize the car. I thought it was either Dakota McGrath or Brandon McGrath, one of the two. Now, Dakota works with me at the church. He's one of our band players, guitar player and singer. And his dad volunteers there sometimes doing lights and audio stuff. But anyways, yeah, it was Brandon. And so I pull up next to him before we get onto the freeway. We're at our stoplight. And I'm like, hey, Brandon, what's going on? He goes, not much. I'm like, where are you going this morning? He goes, Payson. I'm like, what? Because this whole time, instead of Brandon McGrath, I'm thinking it's a different Brandon. Brandon Glade, someone who owns this other company that I do some side work for. So this whole time I'm thinking it's Brandon Glade, and Brandon McGrath pulls up next to me. He goes, I'm going to Payson. I'm thinking, and I'm like, what are you talking about? He goes, yeah. I'm like going, no, not you. So I figure he's just messing with me because he saw my Facebook post. So I didn't think he was serious. And a conversation goes on a little bit, and I'm getting a little bit nervous. So eventually I go, you know what? I still have an extra seat in the plane one way or the other. You can come with me. Maybe I made a mistake. I don't know. And he goes, okay. So we pull out. We leave. You know, we get on the freeway, and I'm frantically going through my phone, looking through my text messages, and sure enough, it was him the whole time. I had the whole wrong Brandon in my head from last night.
Oh, that's so, too funny.
Oh, man. It was super embarrassing, but it was – he was cool with it, you know. It was just an honest mistake, but I didn't care anyways. I mean, he's my friend too. I feel free to come along, you know. But just kind of funny. We were laughing about it later on. But yeah, so we flew up to Payson. It's kind of my default flight. You've heard me talk about it. It's exactly 50 nautical miles, exactly in a straight line from Deer Valley. And on the way up there, Brandon was up front. So as soon as I took off, I gave him the yoke and I said, all right, you know, follow the magenta line, head that way. And I'll kind of help you with altitude by trimming it out and whatnot. And man, he almost got me and Mason sick, just zigzagging all over the place. He couldn't keep it straight, you know, for nothing. And I'm like, stop trying to, I told him, don't change. I'm like, I kind of messed up. I don't really mean it for you to like, just look at the GPS and try and follow that magenta line, because every time you aim for it, by the time you correct, you've already passed it, which means now you're going to go the other direction. I said, just pick that peak on the mountain way, way out there, and let's just aim for that, you know? So So that helped quite a bit. We finally got straight. But after we got back, I checked the GPS log, on Google Earth, and there we were, little S's, doing little S turns all the way up there. But at that time, we also had quite a bit of fires going on, so there was a TFR in the area, and my straight line from Deer Valley to Payson basically skirted us right along the edge of the TFR, so we could see quite a bit of the smoke, and we couldn't see any of the fire, but we could see some of the heavy smoke rising from the forest down below. It's that time of year. We get quite a bit of those up north. So we had our breakfast, and once we got up there, there's just tons and tons of firefighting helicopters all over the place because they use that as kind of a staging area. A couple of the Ericsson air cranes were there, and a whole bunch of other like larger helicopters like Hueys and stuff like that were up there doing their thing. So I got to see a lot of that, a lot of those aircraft come and go while we were having breakfast. And then on the way back, gave it to Mason. Gave it to Mason, and then he flew us back. And he would make a really, really good pilot. I've told him, if he enjoys it like I think he does, he seems to. He's got a good hand and keeps it real steady. So made it back to Deer Valley, and that was what was that? That was that was barely over an hour to Payson and back, because it's, like I said, 50 miles each way. So it doesn't take long to get there and back, especially the back, because we're descending most of the way. So that was a lot of fun. I got more to go, but I want to hear about what's going on with you guys. How about you, Brad? You tell what's going on with some of your IFR flights.
I managed to get my ticket wet since the last time we recorded a few times. I think I've got five solo instrument approaches in actual that I've finished off since getting my ticket, and that's been a lot of fun. The first one, I think I said on the last episode that I wanted to do it on my own. I wanted to get it out of my system and be able to concentrate and focus just on shooting the approach and not have to worry about another passenger sitting in the right seat and them being nervous or maybe getting bounced around and not feeling so good. So I flew out to Eau Claire, right next to Chippewa Falls, home of Line and Googles, of course. And it was a perfect day. There was a layer at about 1,000 feet, and it went up maybe 700-800 feet thick, and then it was clear and a million on top. So I flew over on top, and it was a nice, smooth, easy flight. I was on an instrument flight plan. I checked the weather, I filed, I did all the necessary prep work. Flew over there and was getting set up. They said, hey, expect an ILS approach on runway such and such. So okay, great. So they gave me the option of doing a DME arc to get onto the final approach, or flying a procedure turn. A DME arc is you fly a fixed distance away from a navigation aid. In this case, there's a VOR right on the field. You stay 12 miles away from it. You end up flying an arc, just a portion of a circle. You fly around until you get to the final approach fix. Then you turn inbound and you can intercept a localizer and fly that all the way down. In this case, it's an ILS, so you get a localizer, which gives you horizontal guidance, and a glide slope, which gives you vertical guidance. I could do that, or I could do a procedure turn, which is basically fly straight over the field at 4,000 or 5,000 feet, turn around and come back and intercept the ILS and fly it in that way. And I just opted for the DME arc. And it was not the best choice, because I ended up, they decided to squeeze a regional jet in front of me. And then the regional jet was slow, so they told me I had to slow down. So there I am, puttering along at about 80 knots, waiting for this RJ to get out of the way so that I don't have to do a hold, which would have been in actual. And that really wasn't what I wanted to do on my first time at bat. So I slowed down enough, and the RJ got on the ground before I got onto the got up to the final approach fix, which was a good thing for me. I descended into the clouds, got a little bit disoriented, and since then learned to get on the gauges about 30 seconds before I get into actual. That really helps a lot. If you're already acclimated to the gauges and you're kind of got your scan going and everything before you actually get into the clouds, it's a lot simpler. So I shot the approach and life was great. On the way back, I filed for a lower altitude and flew pretty much the whole way back in actual. And that was good. I got used to using the autopilot. I got used to doing coupled approaches with the autopilot. It was a good learning experience for me. And then since then, this was in an Archer.
Archer?
Yep.
Cool. What autopilot's that got in it?
Just a single-axis roll autopilot.
Okay.
And so it's very simple to couple it up, although it's not totally simple. I managed to screw it up a little bit. When you couple it to the GPS, which is what I was using for about half of the way over and for doing the DME arc, there's a different mode that you have to have it in, and when you're going to switch to having it coupled to the ILS, you have to tell the autopilot, okay, stop paying attention to the GPS and start paying attention to NAV1. And I neglected to do that. And so all of a sudden I'm noticing that, hey, I'm off course. Hey, I'm getting further and further off course. Hey, I don't know what's going on. So I just shut off the autopilot and hand flew the approach, which was fine. You know, I got out from under with a good 1,000 feet of altitude underneath me, and it was all good. But it taught me to pay a lot more attention to how the GPS and the autopilot and NAV1 have to all get along, and you, the pilot, are responsible for transitioning the autopilot source from one system to the other. So lesson learned, and again, it was in a safe way. Since then, I've actually had a couple of trips that have been a lot easier to plan because of the IFR ticket. I took my wife and I up to Grand Marais, which is about 20 miles from Canada, just on the north shore of Lake Superior. Beautiful little resort town, really nice. But it's about, what is it? It's about a 5.5 hour drive from here. And it's about a 2 hour flight. And
nice.
And my wife isn't all that keen on flying, but this was a trip that we would not have been able to make. I mean, we went up one day, spent the night, came back the next day. We would never have been able to do that with the car. It would have been 11, 12 hours in the car as opposed to 4 hours total time in the airplane.
Oh, yeah.
And again, it was a lot easier to plan because I knew that barring thunderstorms, it was going to be a pretty easy trip. As it turned out, it actually was a little bit more complicated than that because we had to deal with freezing levels, if you can believe it or not, in June. Up there, that close to Canada, it gets cold. The freezing level was about 7,000 feet, and so I had to make sure that we weren't going to be running into icing conditions and all of that kind of fun stuff. But was able to again, file IFR and punch through a few clouds on the way up, and the plane did just fine, and on the way back, we encountered a little occluded front. It was just some gentle rain, but, you know, the visibilities came way down, and I was just get on the gauges and fly it that way, and everything turned out just fine. It would have been a trip that, without the instrument ticket, I would have been really nervous about whether or not we would have been able to do it at all, because we really couldn't be, we weren't in a position where we could come back late. You know, we've got the kids and all of that stuff back at home, and so we really wanted to get back on time. And the instrument ticket really made that easy. It was a lot less worry for me, just because we get a lot of IFR here. And then since then, I flew down to Milwaukee. That was, it was again all VFR, but it was a very easy trip to plan. I did it in the Warrior, so I didn't have a GPS, so I flew it VFR direct at 9,500 feet on the way down, which is hard to get to in a Warrior when it's 90-something degrees on the ground.
Wow.
I was originally planning to go to 11,500, and I was doing some math and figuring out how long it was going to take me to get up there, and the if the speed boost that I would get at that altitude was going to be worth it. And I'm like, oh, forget it. I'm just staying at 9,500 and doing it that way. As it was, I was 135 knots across the ground, and the Warrior isn't too bad.
No, not bad. So why 9,500? Did you have any obstacles, or was it just for economy cruise?
Exactly. It was just there was a big tailwind, and the higher I went, the faster it got. Gotcha. If I had gone up, it was about a 35-knot push at 9,500 feet, and at 11,500 feet, it would have been about a 45 to 50-knot push. And wow. At 9,500 feet in a carbureted Warrior, you're burning about 7.3 gallons per hour. So 135 knots at 7.3 gallons per hour is a pretty good deal.
Yeah, I'd say that's not too shabby.
Yeah, no, I was going to say sadly, but it's actually not too sadly. I flew back low to stay under all of that prevailing wind, and it was a wonderful trip back. You know, I was puttering along in the Warrior at 105 knots with in calm, basically completely still air, and I flew it back at between 1,000 and 2,000 feet AGL, and that was just really nice. It's beautiful country, and it's low, and it's early in the morning, and there's no turbulence, and it's just the sun's behind you. It's just a really pretty way to go. So I got a lot of respect for the Warrior out of that trip because it's a very cheap airplane to fly, and it's perfectly capable for a lot of trips.
Cool.
So other than that, I've been getting ready for a couple more trips. Originally, I'd been planning to fly out to Glacier Park on the western edge of Montana and ended up making other plans, so I won't be flying that trip. But I am going to fly into Oshkosh again this year and plan on getting there on Thursday, the middle of the show. And so just looking forward to another nice trip in a little airplane.
So you are flying in again this year?
Yeah, I've got the plane. I signed the plane out in February, I think.
Okay, cool.
Nice. So how long does that take you to get there?
By plane, it's about 2 hours, and by car, nice. It's about six.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I bet you it's just beautiful out there with the farms and stuff, all that grain. You know, I'm envious about that type of flying. I mean, people like to see me flying in the mountains and stuff like that, but it's just brown all over the place here, you know? It's nice to see some green once in a while.
Yeah, the green is really nice, and there's no shortage of places to land. If I had a tailwheel, it would be even better, because then you could do some off-field kinds of stuff, but that's okay.
Yeah, and on top of that, the smog out here in the big city, you know, especially coming back into Phoenix, and you know, it's always got that hazy brown layer that you're flying through. Yeah.
Yeah, we have that too. I had one fun experience, or actually not fun, but kind of interesting experience on the way back. I was flying right through the Class Delta at St. Paul, not the big Bravo at Minneapolis St. Paul, but the little Class Delta airport. And, you know, I'm on the tower, and I got permission to transition the airspace and did all that good stuff. And they gave me a traffic alert that there was a Cirrus coming in. And initially they said, he's about 7 miles out. And at 7 miles out, you're not going to see anybody during the daytime. I got a traffic alert, and 7 miles out, I'm not thinking too hard about it, because at that distance, you're never going to see another aircraft. And then it got to 3 miles out, and then it got to 1 mile out, and neither one of us could see the other one. And so I finally just said, forget it, I'm just going to turn. I'm going to try to get away from all of this traffic, turn away, and we'll deal with it that way. And as soon as I turned, he could see me. And then shortly thereafter, I was able to see him. But it was nice to have air traffic control watching out for us, because I think if they hadn't been there, it would have been a pretty close call.
Yeah. I guess we'll go ahead and we'll take a quick break and be back in a few.
The members of the In the Pattern podcast are participating as private individuals. Their comments do not necessarily reflect the views of the various organizations they work with, the instructors they learn from, or the flight schools they attend. Remember, these guys are student pilots, so anything you hear on this podcast that sounds like advice on an aircraft operation is obviously from the perspective of student pilot. You should always consider your own situation, consult your instructor, remember your training, and fly the airplane. Cleared for the option.
Okay, and we're back. So, Brad, I heard your club might be getting a new plane.
The only other thing that was happening was our club might be purchasing a Mooney, and I don't know how we're going to continue to call ourselves Club Cherokee, but there it is.
Yeah, that'll be a little difficult.
150-knot plane, though, I don't think anybody's going to complain too hard.
No, Moonies are, and man, I got to be honest, I like that tail. Just that forward swept looking vertical stabilizer. She's sexy.
I am really anxious to fly that plane.
Yeah.
M20J, or I mean a Mooney M20J is awesome. It's one of those planes that would be on my list if I was looking for a used airplane. I would have to consider the Mooney because for the money, for the speed and carrying four people, maybe not so much as far as the load because that's all pretty relevant, I guess, but you can do what 135, 140 knots on 9, 10 gallons an hour.
I think it's more like 150? Looks like it's more like 160. It's 201 miles per hour.
Yeah, I mean for the gallon burn per hour, I mean it's tough to beat a Mooney. Tough to beat a Mooney.
Yeah, so, I mean it's an IO 360. It's the same engine that's in the Archer and the Arrow and a 172.
Yeah, it's just the 200 horsepower version instead of the 180 horse.
Right.
Yeah, nice plane.
Yeah, I mean, I've always, since I've been interested in aviation, have wanted a Mooney. That's always been like that plane that I've always just wanted.
Yeah, there's an amazing cult following for the Moonies. You know, all kinds of clubs, tons of information out there, plenty of parts. Everybody knows how to work on them. You know, I just think one of the things I'm constantly looking at when I'm looking at planes is, you know, how fast can I go for my money, you know, and can I do it with four people? Because I'm always looking for the four person plane. And who knows when it comes time for me to actually get involved with purchasing a plane or being involved with a club or whatever, you know, maybe it'll be a two person plane. But, you know, for right now, I always got to consider, you know, we're a family of four, so that's what I would look for, even though since I've had my ticket, I've only flown with the whole family one time, but most of the time when I go flying, it's with two other people, so.
You know, I've yet to take, other than one flight lesson, a third person up. It's just when I was flying out of Brett, we did not have the useful load in those planes to be able to do it. Now it looks like if it's not 100 degrees, I can. But I haven't actually been able to do it yet, so.
I've flown a few times with three people. In fact, I'll probably be flying to Oshkosh with three. One of the other folks from my club is probably going to join me. But the third person will weigh 60 pounds, so that's a little easier.
Yeah.
The Moody's certainly are on the lighter end of useful load compared to... you know, the plane that I would love to get into is like an S-35 Bonanza, because they've got a big useful load and they've got a lot of speed on them. The downside, of course, is the fuel burns a lot higher.
Yeah, I think that'd be a great choice for the club. Give you something that, you know, gets there a little bit faster. I think that'll be one of the hot commodities there that everyone's gonna want to have booked up all the time. I know I'd be trying to take it all the time.
Well, and it's really good if you're going someplace. One of the things that I've learned is that if you're not going really long distances, take one of the other planes. You know, if you're just going to go cruising around on your 50-mile trip to Payson, Arizona, 50 miles for you, you know, yeah, don't take – there's not much point in taking the Arrow because it's just going to cost you a lot of money for no gain. In fact, if you do the math, the difference between the Arrow – and the Archer doesn't pay off economically until you get outside of about 500 miles. Then the Arrow starts to make more sense. And that's only if you do really long legs because the Arrow has such huge gas tanks in it. And you don't waste time and engine time descending to get fuel and then climbing back up again. But other than that, the Archer is generally a better deal. And like I said, on this trip to Milwaukee, the Warrior did just fine, and it's a lot cheaper to run than the Archer is, and it's pretty close to just as fast. So, you know, there's a lot to be said for little planes that aren't necessarily speed demons if you're not going really long distances.
Yeah, it's a good point, because it's one of the reasons why I haven't taken the Archer 172 on a long flight, because in my mind I'm just thinking ka-ching, ka-ching, you know, how many hours am I going to have to pay for this thing, you know?
And that is the problem with renting in a nutshell.
Yeah.
Yep.
Exactly. And as much and as easy as it probably would be to sit down on paper and try to explain to my better half how it's actually saving me money to get involved with a club or co-ownership or whatever, it's still not happening for a few years. Either maybe one when my truck gets paid off, which might be, you know, it could be, you know, 3 to 4 years, or when my daughters graduate college. So again, that's several years out too. So
I'll tell you what, though, I'm going to try my hardest to get in on a ownership or a smaller flying club after we get the wedding done and before we have kids. If I can have it before the kids.
Before the wedding, you said?
No, it's not going to happen before the wedding. There's no way. But if I can do it before we have kids, you know, maybe, just maybe, we won't lose that. But it's going to be hard to kind of justify getting it if we already have kids.
Well, and Chris, if the kids go to college in, you know, Southern California or someplace like that, then the argument for a plane, I know the economics are tight, but the argument for the plane gets a lot simpler, because it's like, hey, we can go out there and visit the kids for a day on the weekends, which would be completely something that's probably infeasible to do with a car, but it's really easy to do with a light airplane.
Yeah. Well, I know my oldest daughter is actually going to college here in Phoenix to Grand Canyon University, is where she wants to go.
That's probably a tough sell then.
Yeah, it's only maybe a 20-minute drive at most. So, but maybe my younger one. Oh, my youngest one. Might go out of state. I have no idea. She hasn't really, you know, she's still a freshman, or she'll be a sophomore. So, but my oldest one going to Grand Canyon University is maybe a 20-minute flight or a 20-minute drive. So, yeah.
Maybe you'll have to hold out for grandkids.
Yeah. No, I'm telling you, man, Terra Fugia. That's all you need.
Terra Fugia? Oh, please.
See, you can drive there and then you can go fly. And, yeah. Perfect.
Yeah. And how much is one of those?
Doesn't matter.
Not economical at all.
Can you imagine what the insurance on one of those is going to be?
I don't want to know.
Or can you even imagine what the insurance on the Icon?
The Icon?
Can you even conceive of how much that insurance is going to be?
I don't know if the Icon's really going to be that high, though.
It's amphibious. Why do you think the Icon would be?
Because it's amphibious.
Well,
amphibious
and it's
planes
nothing new.
Cost a fortune to insure. If you,
really?
I can't, I could afford to buy a lake airplane, a lake amphibian. They're cheap, but the insurance on them is astronomical because people flip them over and kill themselves. The previous head, 20-year head of the amphibious airplane or seaplane, is the Seaplane Association, 20 years as president of the organization, he died flipping over his seaplane because he landed with the gear down.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it just, the insurance says, okay, this is, you know, you're probably going to flip the airplane and total it. And so you're going to pay in monster premiums in order to cover that potential loss.
Yeah, I can see that. I really want one of those, though.
I could see that. I really didn't think about that because, you know, they tout the, you know, this LSA cheap airplane, blah, blah, blah. It doesn't fly fast, so it's not, you know, it's got, you know, it's spin resistant, blah, blah, blah. It's got the parachute. Oh, yeah, you can land on water, so there's that.
I still want one.
Yeah, I mean, unless they come up with a way that it won't that they can convince the insurance company that it won't flip over and just total the airplane if you land gear down on water, it's going to be a pretty tough sell.
Yeah, true. I don't know if they have that down. Spin resistant, yes. Anti-flip over in water with gear down, I don't know about that yet.
Or anti-slide down the runway with gear up.
Yeah, yeah. Cool airplane, though.
Well, you can't... you cannot, under LSA rules, touch the gear once the plane is in flight, I believe.
Right. Under the LSA rule, if you take off from land, you must land on land. If you take off from water, you must land on water. They don't want you transitioning the gear in flight if you're an LSA pilot.
Yeah, that's what I gathered when we listened to
that. Is that the way it works?
That's what they were saying at the at Oshkosh last year, was that at least I know you cannot take off from land from water and land on land. You must take off from whatever one and do it, as long as you're flying under the LSA rules.
So that would make the plane more expensive for a private pilot to fly than for a sport pilot.
Probably.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, you kind of wonder about the difference. Like, so you're a sport pilot license, and under those rules, you're not allowed to do the gear up or down change, depending on what surface you took off of. So therefore, they will never expect you to do a gear down landing in water, so you get a break on insurance. Maybe? Maybe not? It's an interesting
thought. Kind of stink if you lost the engine, though.
Yeah, well, there's always that, but...
Well, in that situation, I'm doing it.
Yeah.
It makes me wonder if you can transition the landing gear during in flight.
You can, from what I understand.
Okay.
It's just that per regulations, it was really weird, and I remember them explaining it. And it was a year ago, so I don't remember every little bit about it, but I remember them explaining the whole concept behind it.
Yeah, you kind of got to wonder how many just sport pilots, how many pilots under those rules would still stay with those rules? I mean, hey, I'm going to go take off from XYZ airport today, but I'm going to really go land in this lake, and I don't really care what the rules say. Now, where that comes back to bite you is you've been in the airplane, and now there's a report. Where did you take off from? Why did you try and land here? The rules say don't.
Well, then you null and void your insurance, and they're not paying for it.
Yeah, it's just like me landing off field with one of my club planes. You know, you can do it. You're just doing it kind of at your own risk.
Yeah.
It certainly does explain the trailer, though.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, trailer and folding wings makes it nice to hang her in your own garage if you can do that.
Right, but you need the trailer if you're going to get it on, if you're going to ever use it on water.
Yeah, yeah. Very true. John, what's been going on in the world of flying with you and the new club and the planes out there? And you've been running into some difficulties with planes being down, I hear.
So yeah, there's been a lot going on here. I guess I'll start off from where I was the last time. I know in the last episode, I just kind of started talking to my instructor, started planning on when we were going to do the checkout. My initial try for the checkout was May 4th. Well, that didn't happen because the instructor was sick and the weather was crappy. So the next time we tried it a week later, crappy weather. Tried it a week later, crappy weather. Tried it a week later, crappy weather. Finally, got up, it was mostly for low clouds most of the time, and then one day we had two high winds. We actually did some ground that day, which was nice, but it took me a month to get finally a decent day to go up and get checked out. So I got checked out the day after Memorial Day. It was a very bumpy day. The wind was kicking pretty good. I think it was somewhere, it was recorded at 12 gusting 15. After the flight, talking to the instructor, we were a little more under the impression that it was probably gusting to 20.
A bit outside my comfort zone.
It was not outside my comfort zone necessarily at Martin State. Nice big runway, a lot of room. I've flown in 20 knot gusts decent amount of times in my flight training up there, so I felt comfortable enough doing that. And I've done 25 before, and that was about my limit. At Tipton, no way would I ever try it in 20 there. Just, it's a 3,000-foot runway. You got trees on each end. The wind starts doing some really weird stuff. So I was not comfortable doing that. Luckily, you know, I had the instructor there, and you know, I felt comfortable doing it with the instructor, but, and she actually said she didn't help me land at all. I still don't know if I believe her on that one, but, it was definitely kicking. But the checkout went pretty well. We went out, kind of departed the field, went around, did some steep turns, did some stalls. What else did we do? Actually, it, some of the basic stuff. Came back, and a lot of it was kind of getting used to getting in and out of the area, getting to and from the airport. Mainly because the airport is sandwiched directly in between the flight restricted zone of DC and the Class Bravo of BWI. So coming in, you kind of got to watch on either side. Then we did three full stops. Just getting used to the pattern. First one, man, I was way right. I turned, I kind of came into the pattern all wrong because this is when we first entered the pattern. Next thing I know, I turned final and I am over top the hangars instead of lined up with the runway. She was kind of like, well, you can either fix it or do a go around. And I already had in my head I was doing the go around, so I was already starting to put the power in and say, we're going around. Did go around, came back around. The next time, still my pattern wasn't quite right. I think, I'll tell you what, the pattern at this airport being 3,000 foot versus the 6,800 I'm used to, it's a tiny little pattern. I am not used to a pattern that small. So I think that was one of the things that was kind of getting me. But after the third landing, she looked over to me and asked, she's like, you feel comfortable taking this up? You feel comfortable with the airplane? You know, without me here doing it. And I was like, yeah, you know, as long as it's not as windy as it is today. And she's like, yeah, I agree with that. And she's like, you're good to go. So got checked out in the 172. I have until the end of July to go back up. So I have a flight scheduled for next Friday to go up. I did have one scheduled on July 4th. However, we had that nice little windstorm that I'm sure a lot of people heard about come through here last Friday.
Yeah.
What is it?
That would have just been more exciting.
Derecho? What is... Everyone know how to pronounce it?
Pronounce what?
It's like derecho or something. What the name of the storm was. A certain type of storm. I don't know. But that came through. So number one, I was without power for 3 days, and then it came back, but then they took it away again for like another day, and then it finally came back on. Turns out, though, that three of the planes at the club were damaged in the storm, the ones that had their tails into the wind. The plane that I was supposed to fly on the 4th had a bent aileron and a bent elevator. Currently, that's scheduled to be back on July 20th. We had a 152 that was damaged. I believe same thing, aileron bent. And then we had one of the T-41s was apparently damaged as well. That was a bent aileron rudder and possibly elevator and rudder, I think. But it was significant damage to the tail, I believe, and there's a possibility that once they talk to insurance that could be totaled, which would be pretty bad. So needless to say, I had no planes to fly on the 4th.
That sucks.
Yeah, well, we have three 172s, and the other 172 is down for maintenance because the other 172 is the only 172 we have with the 160 horsepower original engine. So what they were planning on doing is when they do the overhaul, they were going to upgrade it to 180 horsepower that the other two have. Well, the problem is that's budgeted for October. Well, because we had no winter here, they reached TBO. They're 80 hours from TBO right now, so they're a lot closer to TBO than they expected to be. But when they went to do a oil change, they found metal shavings. Well, it turns out, I think it was push rod, a pin, I forget what it was, a valve or something was stuck or bent or basically the engine was worthless and they were going to have to take it down now. So they're trying to figure out if they can get the funds to do an overhaul or replace the engine. So that's kind of down indefinitely at the moment. So there's only one 172 that's flying. So that's kind of, I looked at the schedule the other day and I said, whenever I can find time, I'll take off work and go fly. I just need to get up soon.
Yeah, it's got to make it tough for scheduling for all those people with just one plane now.
Oh, yeah, it's pretty hard. And you know, we're basically down to, we have two 152s running because one of those are down. We have one 172 and we have two T-41s because the other T-41 is down. And then we also have a Archer, I believe, Arrow. I think it's an Arrow, whatever the retracted one is. I forget. So, yeah, scheduling is kind of a nightmare. So I did find a nice block on the 13th. From 9 to 12 that I'm taking. I haven't decided where I'm going yet. I'm kind of just thinking about doing, just going up, just kind of putzing around Baltimore somewhere. Then come back and do my three landings. I might go around Baltimore. I might go to Frederick. I haven't decided yet, so I got a week to figure that out. It sounds like I'm going to be taking one of my coworkers up with me. So that'll be pretty cool. That's basically been my flying, you know, the storm and everything else, kind of sucked, but,
yeah, that's a bummer. I hope they, get those back up. It'll be nice to have that, 180 horsepower in that other 172 though, for sure.
Well, there's a possibility it may not happen now because of the,
because the other damage.
The problem is that they just dumped $40,000 into the Archer. That's kind of the problem. But overall, you know, I mean, in the end, I'm checked out now, which is awesome. I've flown again for the first time in like forever since August. So I'm really excited to go back up, next Friday. I think it's going to be great. It's kind of weird because now I have a strict 60-day I have a strict 60-day currency to keep up with now, which will be
speaking of currency, I have a quick question. And it's actually with your medical. Do you know, I don't remember this because mine was several years ago and I haven't had to redo it because I'm under 40. I was under 40 when I had mine done, but is there a urine test?
Yes.
Yes?
Yes.
Sorry, I couldn't hear that at all. Can you repeat the question?
Is there a urine test on the medical?
No.
I had one.
You had one? I think I had one, but I can't remember. And the reason I ask is because I have a friend of mine who was being sued... What's that?
Go ahead.
He was in a lawsuit and was very stressed out, so he was prescribed some anti-depression medication. He's been off of it for 30 days, and I think he also had Cymbalta, but he's only been off of it for like a week. But he didn't want to go take that medical and have any of that stuff show up in a urine test. So he's going to hold off until he knew it was out of his system, or go if it wasn't, if there wasn't a urine test. But I couldn't remember.
I think, you know what? I think John's right. I think there is, but I think it's only for certain things, diabetes mm-hmm. being front and center for the third class medical. Mm-hmm. But I would call AOPA if I had any question about that.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and because they'll be able to very quickly and accurately answer the question.
Yeah, I told him to call his the FAA examiner that he was going to go see and just check on that. And you could also go look up the drugs and find out how long they are known to be in your system too, and get that kind of information as well. But I couldn't remember a couple years ago when I had mine done. To be honest with you, I think I did one, but I'm not sure.
Did you see that they changed the duration for a lot of those medications this past January? Like, if you take NyQuil, you have to wait 60 hours before you can fly?
Did you say NyQuil?
Yeah, NyQuil. Yeah, it's 6 0-hour before you can fly after NyQuil.
Wow.
Wow.
But I can have a beer and go in 8 hours.
Correct.
Okay. I did not know that. Very interesting.
Yeah, I believe that the way it works is they take the amount of time between doses and they multiply that number by 5, and that's how they come up with the how long it is before you can fly after it. And NyQuil is a 12-hour dose, so 60 hours is what you get.
Hmm. Cool.
Very interesting.
Well,
the things you learn.
Yeah. Well, I think we're getting close to the end here. I think we have, real quick, we'll go over some of our Oshkosh stuff, and then we'll go ahead and move on to shout-outs, if that's cool with you guys.
Yeah. Oshkosh, yeah, definitely. So we got excited for that.
We got 2 weeks.
2 weeks.
It looks like the three of us will definitely be there. I hear Mark will not make it. Is that correct?
Yeah, as far as I know, Mark's not going to make it. We had chatted a little bit about having him fly to MSP, and then I could give him a lift down in the Archer, but it sounds like that's not going to happen for him.
Okay. Yeah. Well, the three of us will make it there. I will be there all week. I know that you two are showing up on Thursday.
Yeah, nobody keep an eye on the field when I'm coming in, okay? It might be nearly as ugly as last year.
Oh, like you think I'm not going to be watching it? Everyone in Camp Bacon.
I snuck in before you were awake last time.
Everyone in Camp Bacon are going to be, like, staring at that field.
I'll keep the tail number secret.
I'll be coming in on Thursday, flying into Appleton, and either I'll take the shuttle or John will come pick me up, I guess, one way or the other. We'll get that sorted out and stay until Sunday. I think my flight leaves out of Appleton at, like, I don't know, I think it's like 2 p.m. So I don't know. We'll get that sorted out one way. Either I get to the airport super early, or maybe I can find a ride over there, or again, the shuttle, like you've talked about, John. Maybe I can get a shuttle over there and not have to leave the camp quite so early.
Yeah. So that'll be cool. I know there's going to be a lot of people at Camp Bacon this year. I'm really excited to be there again. I'm going to be heading up on Saturday. I should be leaving here a little before noon. I'm going to be picking up Pilot Damon from the Pursuit of Wings podcast. I'm going to be picking him up and bringing him up to Oshkosh with me in the Versa Mobile that now has keyless entry. We should be arriving sometime very early in the morning on Sunday.
You saved the day for him. Good job.
Yeah, so I was thinking about going up that way anyway, and, you know, I got no problem staying an extra day to pick him up, man. I'd rather have the company in the car, too, because it's a long 17-hour trip by yourself, let me tell you.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, if only there was a faster way to traverse long distances.
If only there was a faster way that didn't cost, like, I don't know, all of my wedding fund. I priced it out. It would cost me about $2,000 to do it.
Yeah, but if you split it with Damon and, you know, You can share the load.
Yeah, but not enough for me to be able to do it right now to justify the cost. Because for me to drive up there is $250 total.
I could buy a decent used car for what it would cost me to rent a plane for the trip up and back.
Yeah. So it's not an option yet for me, at least while I'm in this club, probably. When I own my own plane, oh, you bet I'm going to be flying up there every time. But yeah, we'll be there a week. We'll be leaving on Sunday. Goal is to have definitely have the dailies out this year. We're going to be working like crazy to bring a whole bunch of content from the show. I would like to do at least one full episode since we're going to have three of us there this year, which will be great. And hopefully we can have some other people pop in here and there since we're going to be around pretty much every podcaster that exists. Definitely looking forward to seeing you guys and looking forward to seeing any of the listeners. You know, feel free to stop by Camp Bacon, send us a tweet, do anything, come hang out with us. You know, it's going to be a lot of fun, and I'm really looking forward to it.
UCAP Beer Bash.
As long as
UCAP Beer Bash and the Rocketeer will be playing at the theater that night.
I saw
after,
that.
The Beer Bash, so that'll be good too.
Has anybody heard about Potapalooza or the My Transponder Party?
As far as I know, I haven't heard of a definite date on that yet either.
I haven't heard a peep.
I'll have to send out some see if I can get some info on that.
Bill Will, he's not coming. He moved to San Diego. I don't know if it was late last year or early this year. I can't remember, but he's not going to be able to make it this year.
No, that's too bad.
Well, it sounded like Flying Cheesehead was going to be there. I know a bunch of other people. I know Mike Miley from My Transponder isn't going to be there the whole week. He's only going to be there for a few days, and I haven't had a chance to ask Rod Rakic yet if he was coming. I know they just had a kid, so shout out to him for having their new baby boy. That's awesome, and I know they have pictures of his first flight too.
Yeah, congrats.
So we'll have more information coming out from that. Definitely watch our Twitter feed. And hopefully we'll get another episode out beforehand. If we don't, definitely look for the dailies, which will be coming as soon as I can get up there. Maybe even me and Damon will record one on the way up. We'll see what happens. Anyways.
My shout out would be to Linda Meeks from Girls with Wings. She was out in the Twin Cities neck of the woods and put on a wonderful presentation at Fleming Field, South St. Paul Airport. And it was just great to meet her in person. I'd never met her before. And to see all the wonderful things that she does to try to get more girls into aviation. And just a shout-out to a really nice person.
I would agree with that. Chris, do you have any other shout-outs?
Actually, I don't have a shout-out for this episode. I can't. I do not.
All right. I have a few. I just wanted to mention real quick, since we're talking about Ash 12 a second ago, just to Larry Overstreet and Mark Clipper from AirPigs, just for getting Camp Bacon set up again and doing a really good job with that. I'm really looking forward to seeing them again. They're just some great guys, and thanks to them for all that. I also wanted to throw out a shout out to Pilot Damon again, David Allen, David Vanderhoof, and all the other airplane geeks that Rob Mark, I got to meet Max Flight, Benet Wilson, I finally got to meet her, even though we live like not far from each other apparently, and all of their wives. I went to become a pilot day a few weeks ago. I think it was the day before Father's Day, and basically it was Udvar Hazy Center. They had kind of had the whole thing opened up, had a bunch of pilots fly in. But they did their live podcast there, and David Allen and Pilot Damon came up, and I got to hang out with them throughout the day, and then we all had dinner, and it was a blast hanging out with them. So just a shout-out to them for coming up and for making it a really awesome day. And I guess I'll throw a shout-out to my father on Father's Day for taking us out on the boat to Sailabration in Baltimore. I got to see the Blue Angels from underneath their show in the harbor of Baltimore, and it was cool.
From the boat. Cool.
From the boat. And I mean, it was just, we had the Pride of Baltimore kind of going around the one of the big tall sailing ships from there, and it was kind of going around the harbor. We went in, anchored, and I mean, there was just planes going over us, the Blue Angels just doing their show, just flying right by us on all directions. And I mean, it was just so cool. So happy Father's Day, and thanks to my dad for that. And I believe that's all the shout-outs that I have. So I guess with that, we'll go ahead and wrap this up, and we'll see where you can find each of us. So, Chris, where can we find you?
Yeah, you can reach me at Chris at inthepatternpodcast.com. You can check me out on Twitter at CHOLUBAZ. That's CHOLUBAZ. And as well, my YouTube channel, exactly the same way, CHOLUBAZ.
Cool. And Brad, where can we find you?
Oh, you can just check the website, and everything that you'll ever possibly want to find out about me is on there.
It's true. I made the website myself. I will concur with this. And lastly, you can find me at Pilot Conway on Twitter, John at InThePatternPodcast.com, and at Pilot Conway pretty much anywhere else on the internet. And for the entire podcast, you can reach all of us at podcast at InThePatternPodcast.com, on Twitter at InThePattern, Google Plus, InThePattern, Facebook, InThePattern, MyTransponder, InThePattern, pretty much anywhere InThePattern, including iTunes. Finally, you can go ahead and call us, leave a voicemail if you'd like. That's 707-PCAST-01. That's 707-PAPA-CHARLIE-ALPHA-SIERRA-TANGO-01. And with that, I would say that about wraps up episode 23 of the In the Pattern podcast. We'd like to thank y'all for listening. Remember, make left traffic. You're here for the option.
This and other great shows at the Aviation Media Network.
The Voices in Your Head.com.